Morning. So today I'm going to give you an update on the Palmer amaranth resistance situation in Arizona. We're about 8 years behind a lot of you guys in the southeast, so this is probably a story you're all familiar with. So we'll go through it pretty quick. This is the field that I got called out to in July of 2012. It's wall-to-wall Palmer amaranth, entire length, quarter-mile run of irrigation, 80-acre field totally infested. Obviously, that didn't happen in a season. So my suspicion is that, and the grower admitted to me that he didn't have much success controlling Palmer amaranth in 2011. So that had been there a couple of years. This is what the field looked like after three maximum 44-ounce rate of Roundup Power Max over the top of that field. We collected seed from that field, grew them up in the greenhouse and sprayed them. Talked about this last year. The red numbers on the bottom are the pounds acid equivalent per acre of glyphosate. The controls are over on the right there, and you can see that we injured those plants and stunted them, but they survived even a 9 pound AE per acre application. This is what the plants look like 15 days after application. This is 29 days after application. Couldn't keep the controls alive. They got too big for those little 4-inch pots. But you can see that all of these are regrowing and they're going to survive. And keep in mind, these are greenhouse plants, so they're far more susceptible to glyphosate than field-grown plants. Monsanto also collected seed from that field, and they tell me that this is one of the most resistant Palmer amaranth populations that's been found. So the question my growers were asking me is, well, where did this come from? So we tested for staple or pyrethiobacter resistance. And at the time of this meeting last year, we hadn't done this work. We didn't have a good answer as to whether it was resistant or not. But this is the work we did in the spring of 2013. The blue line is our glyphosate-resistant buckeye population. This is phytotoxicity on the y-axis against a range of staple rates. And you can see the two susceptible populations that we have from Sahorita, which is basically from a semi-wild area and has never been sprayed. And our susceptible population from Maricopa, where we do most of our small plot cotton research. And you can see quite a differential response to staple. The top panel is the susceptible Sahorita population. Going left to right is the control to higher rates of pyrethiobacter. Those numbers in red are kilograms of active ingredient per hectare. 0.1 rate is about the maximum label rate of staple, 3.8 fluid ounces for us. The bottom panel is the buckeye population, and you can see quite a differential response, quite a bit more tolerance. This is the way the dry weights came out, dry weight on the y-axis against a range of pyrethiobacter rates. And you can see that glyphosate-resistant buckeye population responded quite differently than the two susceptible populations. We repeated this a second time in the greenhouse. That's the dashed lines. That slide's kind of busy, but I did want to make the point, looking at the lower rates, that the plants were quite a bit bigger in that warmer time period with more light in the greenhouse. This is the plants. This is the Sahorita susceptible population at 11 days after treatment. You can see the lower rates and the controls are getting pretty big. This is what they look like. This is the Maricopa susceptible population 27 days after we sprayed. So this is the way the data came out. Again, that buckeye population in red is quite a bit more tolerant to staple or resistant to staple than the two susceptible populations. So it does appear that this buckeye population is pretty tolerant or pretty resistant to both staple and Roundup. And just to give you a satellite, some context here, this is a satellite picture of central Arizona. So the area we're talking about is circled in red. This is Buckeye, Arizona. It's about 30 miles west of Phoenix, what we call the West Valley. And during the summer of 2013, well, actually jumping ahead of myself. So back to this original field. This field was picked by a custom harvester in 2011, and we were able to ascertain that this is the field. First field in the upper right is the first field where we collected the seed. In 2011, the next field picked by that picker was to the west, also circled in red. And this is what that field looked like in July of 2012. Isolated plants, a few patches. You can see a pretty good patch here in the lower left of this picture. Also resistant, same population apparently. That was 2012. So 2013, got a lot of more working with PCAs. There were several more sites in Buckeye where there was one case of a cotton field that was treated, and there were some with Roundup, and there were some Palmer escapes. The grower cultivated and ended up with about a dozen or two plants in a small corner of a field. He hand rogued those out. We didn't collect seed from that population. But there were some other areas west of the original fields that I've circled in yellow over here in the lower left, where there were populations that PCAs were concerned were resistant to glyphosate. This is one of them. It's an intersection of two streets, and it's a roadside area. This picture was taken in July. The inset panel on the lower right is what the plants looked like after we sprayed them with a 5% solution of Roundup Power Max. That's 4 days after application, basically no effect, and they looked pretty much the same 2 weeks later when I came back and collected seed. Now you'll notice that the field to the back in the background to the left is sorghum. There were Palmer scapes in that field as well, which we went out and looked at, and we sprayed those, and they all died. So there's a different pool of seeds in that field versus those roadsides. Another problem area for us, and alfalfa is our biggest production area, our biggest production crop in Arizona. As we irrigate, we grow alfalfa in flood irrigated level basins with berms on them, and we irrigate them out of a concrete ditch, and typically it's either done with a siphon tube or more commonly with a port in the side of the concrete ditch. Those ports always leak, and you get that seeping causes a weed population to grow at the top end of each basin in that alfalfa field, and Palmer goes rampant in there in the summer. And this is another set of plants that we sprayed with a 5% solution. We got some chlorosis, but we didn't have a whole lot of effect on them. We collected seed in some of these cases and tested them in the greenhouse this fall. In this graph, the black line is our original glyphosate-resistant population that we collected in Buckeye, and the red line down on the bottom is the susceptible Saharita population. And you can see we have the green line, also a fairly tolerant or resistant population, and the blue line looks a lot like the susceptible Saharita population, except that at the higher rates, it's doing a little bit better. It might just be a low level of resistance. We'll have to do more work with that population to determine if it's truly resistant or susceptible. So back to this picture. So everything we've talked about is this Buckeye area west of Phoenix. The Maricopa population was collected from that center area just to the northwest of Casa Grande. That's where our experiment station is, and we do our small plot cotton research. I also went to some other locations where growers were having problems, and they called me in Picacho Peak, the green circle on Interstate 10, and also Marana, which is just north of Tucson, as well as some fields over on the eastern part of the state. We sprayed all of those with a 5% solution. They all died. We didn't collect seed there. But then late this summer, I got called out to Santan Valley, which I've circled in yellow, to look at some alfalfa fields. And these fields have me concerned quite a bit. There's almost no cotton in this area. It's pretty much all alfalfa production. But this is what I went out to see. You've got a field here that was planted in late summer and then was sprayed with Raptor and Pursuit, two midazolam herbicides that, of course, are ALS inhibitors, just like Staple. And you can see plants that are pretty severely affected and are going to die. There's plants out there that are green and healthy and some intermediate plants. So this is really, really cause for suspicion. It's just a close-up. You probably can't see the dead plants that are carcasses laying on the ground, but there's a range of responses there. We collected seed, and this is what we'll be doing the next few months, is growing some of these plants, some of these collections in the greenhouse and testing them for imidazolinone resistance as well as Staple. I expect them to be cross-resistant, but we'll see. So back to this picture, I just want to make the point that in Arizona, our agriculture is fairly disconnected. We have a lot of discrete areas. Most of them tend to be riparian, former riparian areas or river valleys. Of course, we've pumped all the groundwater out, and the river doesn't, rivers don't flow anymore, but that's where our agriculture is. And so with the right attitude, you would think that we might have a chance of not having this resistance trait move that far across some of these populations. It's a long way through an urban area to get to Santan Valley from Buckeye, Arizona. And similarly, you can see some of these other spots are fairly isolated. But the problem is there are a lot of situations in southern Arizona. So Palmer amaranth is native to the desert southwest. It's the ancestral center of origin for Palmer amaranth, upper Mexico, northern Mexico, and southern Arizona and New Mexico in the Sonoran and Chihuahuan deserts. And Palmer amaranth is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. So when we get our summer monsoon rainfall season, it comes up in all the drainage ditches, all the roadsides, and this provides, in my view, an avenue with the fact that, you know, this trait spreads in pollen for spread around the state, and these roadside populations are going to be the reservoir of this pool of resistance. So you have areas like these roadside drainage ditches. You've got, you know, with the boom and bust of the real estate market, we have abandoned subdivisions that were plotted. Infrastructure was put in, the roads were built, but no houses were built, and that vacant land is just growing Palmer amaranth in the summer. And we have also a lot of dairy, a huge dairy industry that's moved in the last 10 years. And they don't put a lot of effort into weed control in their silage corn. You can go out in a lot of areas and see a lot of Palmer amaranth in those corn silage fields, and even our alfalfa producers on their field edges, on those berms that run down the field and separate the different basins for irrigation. They don't do a good job in the summer, some growers, in controlling the Palmer amaranth population out there. So there's a lot of places where Palmer grows. Females can receive pollen, the males can shed pollen, seeds produced. It doesn't seem, you know, my observation from driving around in 2013 is that it's really inevitable that it's going to spread, because there's a lot of situations where there's not an incentive or a motivation to control Palmer amaranth, and it's kind of an impossible task given how ubiquitous it is. So my message to our growers, our cotton guys, which, you know, they have a very heightened sensitivity to Palmer amaranth now. Almost all of them. In fact, 2013, we saw a huge increase in the use of dinitroanilin herbicides. And I've reported here in years past that research showing that dinitroanilin, Treflan and Proud, work phenomenally well in our irrigated, light textured soils. We can get better than 99% control with a pre-plant incorporated Palmer amaranth. We're controlling the water. We have great weather, lots of sunshine. Weed control is pretty easy for these guys. So if they just control a few escapes, don't let anything go to seed, you know, I think they can keep that seed bank. They got to take a seed bank approach to their management and manage that seed bank on their ground. And if they do that, they can, I think, fairly easily avoid problems with resistant Palmer amaranth. Of course, with the advent of dicamba-resistant cotton and possibly 2,4-D in the future coming out to the southwest,